You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for Halloween. Yes, it's Halloween, October 31st, 2017, and episode 336. I wish it was 666. That would have been really, really interesting. But no, it's episode 336. Tonight, we're throwing everything out the window. We're just going to talk Halloween. It's a special Halloween edition of the Paranormal News Insider, and we'll have a little bit of news. Don't fret. There's some stuff going on, not a whole lot of stuff. And we'll have a whole lot of Halloween information. I'm not going to talk Halloween history. Everyone does that. All these articles all over the place about history. If you don't know the history of Halloween, well, it's out there. It's interesting stuff. I will touch a little bit on it. Okay. But I'm, you know me. I like statistics, stories, and all these things. So we're going to talk some of that with Halloween and a little basic information about the holiday. But then... oh, we're going to talk some ghost stories, some real ghost stories, not the made-up stuff, not stuff that people talk about, people with hangers and arms and falling off on the street and things like that. These are real, legitimate ghost stories. So grab some hot chocolate, find a blanket, light the fire, turn off the lights, and sit back and get ready to enjoy. Tonight's show is I entertain, but... educate you tonight here on a special Halloween edition here on October 31st on the Paranormal News Insider. Well, you know, it's weird too. I was thinking about this. All the things I've done. Halloween is a very special time of the year. Obviously, for those of us that are in the ghost field, this is when they say the veil is thinnest. Tonight's the night when we have to fool the spirits and fool the ghosts that are walking the earth, or there could be some trouble around here. So... uh-oh, little kid's knocking on the door. Go away, I only have pennies. Go away, kids. Okay, they don't want pennies. I only have apples. Necco Wafers is next. So, going back in history, Halloween on this show is always... I've always done something zany, something wild, something different. And, of course, it's worked out conveniently the last couple of years here that I've been on WCJV. We usually shut down for routine maintenance this time of the year, which is... fine by me, because mentally I need to be shut down for routine maintenance. I kind of get a little zany during this. This is the crazy season for us. This is when everybody wants to know more about us. And it's calmed down a lot, because you don't really notice it as much, because we're kind of on call all the time, all year round anymore. But it used to be years ago, nobody cared about us in March or April or May or June, July, August, or even September or January, February. But in October... everybody wanted to interview us. Everybody wanted us to show up to libraries and all these things. So it was always crammed into that one month. But now we're famous. We're rock stars all year round. But it's still a little mentally draining, I guess, because it's the season. And thinking back, well, I didn't have a live show last year this time of the year, but I did a special. I featured an episode called The Hitchhiker, which is from the radio play called Suspense. And I love radio dramas. I think they're really interesting. It forces you to use your mind and draw this image of what you're hearing in your own mind, like reading a book. That's the same thing with radio, like this live show here, talking about things. You have to do it in a certain way where you're trying to project an image into the listener's mind and provide different pauses and breaks and different things to force you to really think about what I'm saying. And This goes back to September 2nd of 1942, and the play starred Orson Welles. And it was actually really cool because it was adapted in 1960 for an episode of The Twilight Zone. So that's what I did last year for Halloween. You can go back and listen to this on the archives. You go to paranewsinsider.com, and there's the archives tab, and you can go back there and you can go all the way back to when I was a little baby in my first show back in 2009. I was only about 2 feet tall. And, no, I wasn't. This wasn't that long ago. 9 years ago. But a lot of stuff, a lot of stories I've covered. And again, Halloween is no different. It's what is different? It's a special time of the year. And 2 years ago, 2015, I did kind of another thing on suspense because it's a really cool show. And I did an episode called Ghost Hunt from June 23rd, 1949. And it's really interesting to hear the way they talk about ghosts. Even it's really not that long ago, really, to those of us that are a little older. But historically speaking, we'll kind of touch on this a little bit tonight. How haunted stuff, ghosts and all these things, all the stuff that we talk about and we imagine or we talk about in folklore all stems back from time periods even further back than the early 1900s. So let's see, what I do in 2014? Well, probably my most favorite Halloween show ever. I don't know, maybe tonight could top it. I don't know. This is pretty exciting. So October 27, 2014, I was at the Westerville Public Library. It was, I don't know how many years back then, but I guess it would be 6 years. And did that. I was there a long time, about 3 hours, doing a presentation. Then I stayed locally. Westerville is northeast of Columbus. And I stayed in the Marysville, Ohio area because I was invited to be the guest on the Grand Dark Conspiracy that night, live on the air at the studios in WQTT in Marysville, Ohio. And so I drove out there, and this show was on from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the morning, so I had a little time to rest and did a live interview on in a radio station, which was a lot of fun. It's so much easier to do that than doing it as a guest. You're staring at your computer screen, and you're having a conversation on Skype, which is on delay, and it's much, much easier to do this live and in person. But obviously for those of us on internet radio, we don't really have that kind of ability, and most radio stations really can't fly out guests for everything. But by far, one of my most favorite interviews and probably one of my favorite Halloween shows ever was getting to talk to Dan Bouts live in the studio in Marysville, Ohio, 3 years ago. If I didn't do a live show, I was going to actually put that one on. I might do that next year for the 10-year anniversary of the Paranormal News Insider. Let's see, 2013. This is when it got a little scarier back then. I did my normal show, and back then, 2013, I was doing a very short segment. It was 5 or 10 minutes long. I pre-recorded it, so I had all kinds of fancy sound effects and songs and things throughout just to keep people from falling asleep. And I had an idea of something that I'd wanted to do, and I did it in this episode. And I pre-recorded it and sent it to Dan and had him play it live. And it was a little different when he played it live because he actually cut in during this segment instead of me just kind of play acting through this. And what I did was, during the episode, I was just talking about the news, and all of a sudden I cut in on my own segment and said, this was pre-recorded, but I'm live, and we're doing a live UFO Skywatch. And then all of a sudden, all heck broke loose. And this was during a time when sky noise was one of the top stories in the paranormal. And there was some sounds of sky noise that had been recorded. I was utilizing that in this sound effect thing. So it cut out of me running through a field being chased by this noise, and it just ended in silence. And I thought it was really, really cool. But it's kind of weird because we were off the air for a while after that. But people were kind of wondering what happened to me. But it was a fun thing to do, and I always wanted to kind of do it again and do it a little bit more dramatically. But it was a fun thing to do to kind of – I don't like to fool people or trick people into thinking you know, I'm doing anything. My integrity is key with this stuff. But it was pure entertainment for the Halloween show. 2012, yeah, we got a little weird, I guess. We did a live seance during the, well, it was the Grand Dark Conspiracy, but we did during the Halloween special, went out to Dan Bounce's house, and we had Dr. Kimberly Rackley come up from Florida. She lived there at the time, and we did a live seance on the show. It was pretty fun. It was pretty crazy, too. Some weird stuff was happening, but yeah, I can't talk about that on the air here, but the year prior, 2011, yeah, we did probably the most bold thing that I've ever done on live radio. We did a live Ouija board session from Dan Bounce's studio in Mansfield, Ohio. Nobody was hurt. Nothing happened. No windows were broken. No demons or anything was let into the world that we know of. And we were trying to contact Harry Houdini, but didn't work out. I think the line was busy and he couldn't answer the phone. But it was a lot of fun. So this kind of is in a different direction. We're not doing anything zany or crazy. Maybe, who knows, next year maybe we'll do some live video and I'll do something here. Maybe burn something. I don't know. Catch something on fire. Summon something. I don't know. We'll think about that. We got a year to think about it now. But tonight we're just kind of taking it easy. And no format, no structure. Just got a few stories and some factoid things I'm going to talk about tonight. But I do want to mention, obviously, my stuff that I'm doing. And this weekend is pretty important because I got an event I'm going to be going to. And it's in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure how many listeners are going to be going. But the Ghost Excavation of Victorian Ghosts at Bedford Springs is this weekend, starting on Friday evening. We're going to have a meet and greet at John's residence, and then we're going to head out to the Omni Bedford Springs Resort and Spa to conduct a ghost excavation, which is, I've kind of explained this before, we basically go back in time, not literally jumping into a time machine, but we use terminology, we use time period clothing, and we try to resonate with certain people that were associated with that area at specific times, and do things to try to get the attention of any kind of either residual or active ghosts that might be at that location. It's a very interesting methodology that's very different than what anyone else is doing out there. And I know a few people have tried to replicate this in a certain way, but not really the way that John Sable does it all the time. And fantastic methodology. Part of this is what I based my E4 method on. And the other part of my E4 method was based on pretty much modern-day table tipping sessions with a guy named Kenneth Batchelor, who kind of spearheaded the Toronto Society for Psychical Research's Philip Experiment. You might have heard of the Philip Experiment, which is a kind of the big deal in parapsychology from the 1970s. And it's still talked about to this day, of creating a ghost out of nothing. So anyway, Saturday, we capped the day off. We're going to do a conference in the conference room at the Bedford Springs Resort. And Rosemary Ellen Guiley will be presenting, as will John Sable. Mary Becker kicks it off about 10 o'clock in the morning if we're all awake. And Margaret Bile will be talking about the history of the seance. After lunch, well, actually, no, we got Rick Fisher before that talking about the Ouija board. Tales from the Talking Boards. And Rick Fisher's a collector of Ouija boards. It's always fun to listen to Rick, a very knowledgeable guy. Brad Bradley will be talking about paranormal investigation equipment then and now. Kind of a subject that I wanted to cover, but he's a knowledgeable guy, so I'll let him have that. Alex Matsuo will be talking about spiritualism, the rise of modern media culture, and good buddy Brandon Masulo, you better be listening tonight as he's handing out candy, new theories on Victorian era ghostly encounters, and that goes with his new book that's out, that was the book of the week, was it last week, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? I don't even know what it is anymore. I do know it's Halloween. And then I'll be up, and I have no idea what I'm talking about. I have an idea, I guess. I have a few ideas. Just haven't narrowed it down yet. Not spontaneous like that. Then we have Herman Mike Stevenson, the connection between EVPs, EMIs, and EOCs, and the science behind them. If you don't know what all those things mean, well, you got to go. You got to show up, find out. Then we're going to have dinner after that. This is 4 hours. I'm not going to be that hungry. But then at 10:30 p.m., we're going to have a seance and table tipping session with Margaret Biles. She's going to be the facilitator. And the coolest thing about all this is that the table that was used during the Toronto Society for Psychical Research's Philip experiment will be there. It will be on hand. I don't know if we're going to be using it or it's just going to be in the room. Either way, I'm more excited about seeing this than anything else. I don't care about speaking. I just want to see this table. I'm really excited about that. And, you know, I could go into the whole seance and table tipping kind of psychology behind it. It goes beyond the Ego Motor effect, which I'm sure we're all aware of how that works. But either way, it's going to be a fun event. Looking forward to that. This weekend, 3 days. And then, geez, what else do I have going on? I've got a few things. Got a few radio shows that are coming up. I think I'm on am I on the Mallard Report? Oh my gosh, I think I am. That's not until December. Do have one. I can't remember the date off the top of my head. Let's see. November 6th. Wow, I don't have much of a break here. So November 3rd to the 4th, the excavation of Victorian ghosts at Bedford Springs in Bedford, Pennsylvania. And November 6th, I'll be on Paratalk Radio at 8 p.m. Eastern. And then December 5th, I'll be on the Mallard Report with the host, Jim Mallard. That's a late night, kids. 9 o'clock. Better take a nap before that one. And that'll be in the heat of the battle of our top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017, which I really haven't talked about yet, but that'll be like, I think, the second week of this. So we'll be kind of in the heat of the countdown, and we'll talk more about the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference that'll be coming up only a month and a half after that show. So looking forward to that. That's my last two on the calendar for the year. Kind of happy because I need a break. And that's it. Real quick in the news, I want to cover this story. Kind of an addition to something that I talked about last week. I thought it was kind of funny. I mentioned the newly released documentary by Todd Standing called Discovering Bigfoot last week. And I kind of made fun of it, kind of put it down, because Todd Standing is a known hoaxer. And we really shouldn't take this show seriously, despite what he's proclaimed about this documentary. And it was released last Friday. I've still not seen or heard anything about it. I've seen no reviews, no word from Netflix on when this hard-hitting and truth-spilling documentary will hit the airwaves. It's supposed to be on Netflix. They said later on this month, and that was October. So this is pretty late in the month as you can get in October, I'm pretty sure. Unless we have Groundhog Day again, and we just keep reliving Halloween over and over again, which means I have to do the show again, which means I can make it better. Anyway, I don't know. I haven't seen it on the list for November releases yet on Netflix either. I just want to see it, just get it over with. But you can't pay for it if you want to pay for it. Don't recommend that. If you're already paying for Netflix, don't subscribe to it just for this show. It's not that worth it. But yeah, you can buy it through other companies. Well, what's in the news now is that Standing is so confident that his documentary will validate the existence of Bigfoot. That's his words, not mine. He's taking the province of British Columbia to court so that they will acknowledge the existence of Bigfoot. I don't know if it's how it works, but he's going to try. So how is he going to do this? Well, he plans to, quote, present physical, forensic, and video evidence, eyewitness testimony from wildlife biologists, wilderness experts, and more in a court of law to prove beyond a reasonable doubt The Sasquatch resides within the forests of British Columbia and eventually Alberta and the U.S., unquote. So he's going to take the state of Washington to court, Alberta and the province of British Columbia to court. So they will proclaim that Bigfoot is real. He's probably just trying to get his name named after this creature, I guess. I don't know. We'll see, but it's kind of crazy. But he's also going to enter his new documentary as evidence. I think he watches too many court dramas, which he says contains, quote, crystal clear video evidence, unquote, of the creature, which if you've seen any of the promo pictures of this documentary, Discovering Bigfoot, you've seen some of the close-up little things. It looks like a, I don't know, something from the, like some kind of Muppet TV show from the 80s or something, like a really horrible Ewok Adventure ripoff kind of looking thing. I'm not convinced. I don't know. If you ask me, it's just a money grab, publicity stunt, something beyond this. I mean, he's eventually going to state that this is just a step toward validation. This is just going to be, you know, he's act like this is the end-all be-all, which a lot of these guys always do this kind of stance, but then they always end up backing out of it and later on saying, well, you know, it's, this is just a step, and eventually I'll release the hard-hitting stuff that's really going to validate this completely 100%. It's just how it is, unfortunately. And that's all I have. Wow, that's it. We're done. It's over. That's the news. Not really. I saw this. I wanted to talk about this. I saw this in the news after I got home from work today, and this is a little scary. In case you're out there trick-or-treating or you bought candy, be careful. The FDA is warning you over eating too much black licorice. I know some people love it. I don't care for it. I think it's like eating a tire. Not a fan of it. I think it's gross. I like the flavored stuff. The flavored Twizzlers stuff. The key lime is great. Which you got to wait till the summertime to get that one. But yeah, Hershey's kind of responded. They're not happy about this. But they also, a spokesperson says that, quote, as with any treat or candy, we recommend you enjoy licorice in moderation as part of an overall balanced diet. Unquote. Well, I don't know about licorice being part of a balanced diet, unless you want to shovel sugar in your mouth. But okay, you shouldn't eat much of anything. Even if you eat a ton of apples or bananas, it's bad for you. Bananas are the highest content of sugar in the natural world. Not good to eat too many of those. I know it supposedly helps with your leg cramps or something. I don't know if that's folklore or not. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Well, I'm a doctor. Not that kind of doctor. Anyway, this response from this spokesperson, Jeff Beckman, came after the FDA released this warning that I just mentioned earlier this week. And they said that consumers 40 years or older should take it easy on the old-fashioned treat because it could cause heart complications. Great. I'm clutching my chest now. They said if you're 40 or older, eating 2 ounces of black licorice a day for at least 2 weeks could land you in the hospital with an irregular heart rhythm or arrhythmia. And that's from the FDA. So if you're eating black licorice, you might want to eat less than 2 ounces a day and don't eat it for 2 weeks. I don't know. That's your medical advice for the week. Keep you guys out of the hospital. Just looking out for you. Looking out for you. It's just black licorice. It's okay to eat the other stuff. You can eat as much as you want. Go ahead and shovel it in. It's not going to hurt you. Well, it will hurt you. It's not good for you either. But it's not going to cause these heart arrhythmias because it's something that's specifically in the black licorice. It's some kind of, I can't even pronounce that word, glycyrrhizin something, or is G-L-Y-C-Y-R-R. I have trouble with any word with two R's in it. H-I-Z-I-N, glycyrrhizin something. So it's okay. It's okay. The red stuff, good. Red vines, good and plenty. They didn't respond to this comment, so I don't know. Maybe they're a little worried here. Black licorice, be careful. I never liked the licorice stuff. if I ever got black licorice, I threw it away. I gave it to my sister. I don't want to eat it. The red stuff, yeah, I like it. It's good. Twizzlers, good stuff. Getting free publicity, guys. Maybe you could send some Twizzlers my way in the mail. Oh, maybe you're not. Anyway. We lost Jim Mallard. Hopefully he's okay. Somebody took him away in the middle of the night. So, let's talk Halloween. Why not? It's what we're here for, right? Now, I'm not going to do the boring history. I hear that on... No offense. I know Colin Schneider did that last night. But I've heard it every year. Everybody talks, ooh, let's talk the history of Halloween. Ooh, here's how it happened. That's cute. That's great. But it's everywhere, and you kind of get a little bored with it. So I like hard-hitting facts, hard-hitting information, which is what I'm going to bring to you. But before I start throwing stuff around, let me throw that link that I talked about like a half hour ago in the chat room about the guys. He's taking everybody to court. Oh, no. Jim can't hear us. Maybe I should make fun of Jim, because then he can't hear us. Nah, it's not nice. Anyway. So some statistics, which I love statistics. It's my favorite little thing. It brings the truth out of anything, really. I don't care what Ben Franklin says. This comes from the National Retail Federation. So it sounds official. It sounds official. National Retail Federation. And it says, with more than 179 million Americans planning to partake in Halloween festivals, up from 171 million last year, spending is slated to reach a record high in survey history. So every year they survey people, not me, but they survey people and they ask them a bunch of questions about what they're doing for Halloween, how much money they're spending, how much money they spent, if they decorated, if they did this or that. This year, consumers are expected to spend $9.1 billion. Now, I've seen this, a lot of stories have talked about this, but you know me, I like to dig into the facts and figures. So, $9.1 billion this year estimated, because it's not over yet, you still got a couple hours, anything can happen. And this is up from $8.4 billion last year. The top costume for children is reported to be an action hero or superhero. And while the top pick for adults is a witch, not a sandwich, unless it's, you know, a witch costume that's like sandy colored brown, I guess. I don't know. Pets will not be left behind, with 10% of consumers dressing their pet as a pumpkin. I guess that's the number one thing. Dress your cat, dog, hamster, ferret, whatever you have, as a pumpkin. Okay. Now, of those surveyed, 70.6% plan on handing out candy. I am not one of them. I left a handful of Necco wafers on the front step for them to fight over, and a couple of pennies that I glued to the ground. 49.2% will decorate for Halloween. I'm not on that one either. 48.2% will dress in costume. Well, that doesn't point out, but I'm wearing my costume right now. You just can't see it. Yeah. Well, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. 46.3% plan on carving a pumpkin. We did that in our household. Not me, because I like to smash pumpkins. Smashing pumpkins. Anyway, 34.5% plan on hosting or attending a party. And I guess I'm... in that 34.5%, because I'm hosting a party right now. This is the party. I don't know if there's going to be an after party. Probably me eating pizza and ignoring people knocking on the door. 30.8% plan on trick-or-treating. Well, I'm a little old for that. I don't know. I would feel weird knocking on people's doors asking for candy. It was fun. I mean, I had my day. I did it. I outgrew it. 22.7% plan on visiting a haunted house. Now, if you're lucky, maybe your house is haunted already. Kind of wish mine was. I never went to go anywhere to investigate. That's what I would say. And 16% are dressing up their pet. I really don't know about that. I guess as long as you're not dyeing it colors, I'm fine with that. Don't abuse the pets, please. Don't make me come after you, because I will. And just so you know, you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the, I don't know what it is tonight, News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yes, we're talking Halloween, and we're about ready to start talking about some ghosts, some real ghost stories, and a little history about ghosts. Why not? I'm just going to throw some stuff off the cuff here. It's Halloween night. We just want to relax, you know, listen to the fire going and just, I mean, it's campfire story season. This is when you gather in the backyard and you tell tales about ghosts and you just relax and have fun. And gosh darn it, that's what we're doing here tonight, because that's what it's about, Halloween. So anyway, back to statistics before we get to the scary stuff. I don't know, maybe some of this stuff is scary to some people. I don't know. Again, like I mentioned, the total planned spending is estimated to reach $9.1 billion, up from $8.4 billion last year. And costumes will make up the largest share of spending, coming in at roughly $3.4 billion. I don't know. Have you seen some of these people's yards elaborately designed and these huge things? I saw a... You guys remember the story I did on the dragon? They found those dragon bones of the Chinese dragon. So the Chinese dragon doesn't have the wings. It's just got like the two sets of feet. Well, this guy had a blow-up thing of a Chinese dragon. I was like, holy cow, I've never seen one like that. I was scrambling for my phone. I didn't want to get arrested taking pictures while I was driving. So I didn't get it. And I didn't go home that way today. So I couldn't get a picture of it. Hopefully it's out the next couple of days. I don't know. Might buy it from the guy. That thing had to be at least $100, $120. It looked like it anyway. It's pretty cool. But anyway, I don't see how costumes can take up the largest share of spending. But according to this report, men will spend $96. Wow. And spend about $20 more on average than women who spend $77. I don't know. Have you seen some of those women's outfits? Really not much to them, so I don't know what they're spending money on. Anyway, $3.4 billion on costumes, $2.7 billion on candy. That kind of turns my stomach. I love candy. Gummy bears, favorite thing in the world. I should have done that. Should have done an informal paranormal news poll on your favorite candy. That would have been genius. It's too late. Maybe Jim Mallard could take that and ask his gallery of guests or as listeners what they like. I'm always interested in that because it's so weird how there's always that guy that likes Charleston chews or something like that. It's like, what? People eat that stuff? Or Necco wafers? Who eats that stuff? I played safe. Three Musketeers, Snickers, stuff like that. Good stuff. Anyway, $2.7 billion on candy. You know, don't buy the Halloween stuff, the stuff with pre-packaged and all. It's expensive. Just put it in a little baggie. Nobody will think twice about it. It's safe. No one will question you. You know, when somebody gets sick, they're not going to come to your house. Just forget about it. $2.7 billion also on decorations. Hey, that's worth it. I love those decorations. I think it's awesome. Nothing cooler than driving down the street and seeing a bunch of tombstones in somebody's front yard or a guy hanging from a tree. We've got an interesting story about that coming up. This is the saddest stat of all. 0.4 billion on greeting cards. Say what? Greeting cards. I don't know. People do it. Save my money for Christmas. Celebrants are most likely to look for inspiration within a physical retail store and through online search engines, I guess that should be. The number of those utilizing pop culture, 17%, and Instagram, 10%. Who gets their stuff from Instagram? Instagram is on its way up, I guess. So people are using it for I don't know what. So 35.2% of people use online searches. 30.3% look at retail stores. I think that should be much higher. I don't know. 20.4% ask their friends and family. Okay. 18.2% use Facebook. I guess a lot higher. 17.9% Pinterest. How do you say that? 17.2% pop culture. 14.2% use print media. 12.9% use YouTube. I don't know how. And the aforementioned 10.4% for Instagram. And 7.5% get their ideas for this holiday season from current events. I think that's much higher. I saw on Facebook, so I don't know if this counts for Facebook or current events or both, but I saw somebody posted a picture of a millennial costume with a kid that was wearing a hat that said, I'm offended, and he was covered in bubble wrap with stickers all over it that said fragile. I thought that was really, really, well, it was true, unfortunately, but it was cool. Oh, that was neat. So let's see, 95% of people, so that's, they use this wonderful statistic. This is a trick, by the way. Whenever you see however many in however many, it's a trick. So it says over 9 in 10. Wow, that sounds huge. 9 in 10. Well, of course, it's 95% of celebrants plan to purchase candy. I'll buy candy tomorrow when it's like half off, where it's, you know, giving it away for free, basically. 72%, which is 7 in 10, no kidding, plan to purchase decorations. 69%, or nearly 7 in 10. Sounds more impressive, right? When you say 7 in 10 people instead of 69%, they plan to purchase costumes. 37%, or 4 in 10, because that sounds impressive, plan to purchase greeting cards. I don't know. Spooky. So let's talk costumes. Let's just get this out of the way. The number one. Should I go backwards or forwards? No, we'll start at the top. Who cares? The number one Halloween costume for children this year is the action slash superhero. I'm not sure that includes girls. I'm pretty sure that's probably just boys, because boys seem to inundate the market. I mean, you're either a princess, or you're a witch, if you're a little girl. I mean, I don't really see that many costume differences. But anyway, adults, witch. I don't see many male witches. No offense. So, I don't know. And there's different types of witches. You have, like, traditional witch, and you have scantily clad witch. That's pretty much it. There's a little bit in between. And pets, as we mentioned already, the number one pet costume of 2017 is pumpkin. That's kind of old, isn't it? Let your dog run around in a pumpkin outfit. I don't know. Number two child's costume, Batman character slash princess. It was a tie. So I guess it is princess. It is another one. You know, you have a variety of princesses, like Cinderella or that Mulan one. I don't know. Does anybody dress up as Mulan anymore at all? Adults, Batman character. Yes. Batman was unable to make it to the studio tonight. I asked him to show up. I told him I'd have the lights out, but he said no. He's got other engagements for Halloween. Thanks a lot, Batman. You're wonderful. Batman, Catwoman, Harley Quinn, etc. I didn't see anybody wearing a Batman costume today. Except normally that one guy that runs around his front yard. He wears it pretty much all the time. Well, just a hat with the ears. He doesn't really wear much else half the time. Pets, the number two costume for pets, as if there was anything other than a pumpkin anyway. Come on, you know what it is. Hot dog. Hot dog. Dress up your iguana as a hot dog, or your hamster as a hot dog. That's hilarious. Take it to a party. Anyway, children, number three costume is an animal. I don't see too many kids dressing up as animals. I have to disagree with this one. And it says cat, dog, monkey, etc. How many children have you ever seen dressed up as a monkey? I mean, they're usually like that during the year anyway, but I don't think I've ever seen a monkey costume on a kid. I've seen a few that could qualify without being a costume, but yeah, anyway. Adults, the number three, this is rigged, because I don't see this either. Well, I do. Okay, never mind. I take it back. Number three for adults is also animal. Cat, dog, etc. So I've seen some girls dressed up as cats, if you want to call them cats. Dogs, I'm not going to touch that one, because you know what? Never mind. We're just going to leave that right where it's at, and you can do with it whatever you want. Pets, the number three is dog, lion, or pirate. It was all tied. I like the pirate ones. I saw a little cat dressed up as a pirate. It was cute. It was awesome. I wanted to take it home and put him on my shoulder. Lions, yes, yeah, pretty much reserved. It should be for cats, but I've seen more dogs wearing the lion costumes. I don't know why. So children, number four, Spider-Man costumes. Adults, number four, pirate. I guess pirates are cool. I don't see any policemen on here. I think that would be pretty high, too. Usually those adult shops sell those police outfits. Anyway, pets, number four. I love this one. Bumblebee. Ha! Huh. I don't know. It's just what pet owners do. Number five for children, Star Wars character. I don't care if there's a movie out or not. There's always going to be a Star Wars character dress up. Number five for adults, Marvel superhero. So you have Captain America, Spider-Man. I actually have an Iron Man costume, but it's not functioning right now, so I don't wear it. Number five for pets. This is sad. Devil. How could you dress up your pet as a devil? Again, as long as you're not dyeing their fur, I'm fine. Which, whatever you want to do. Number six for children, a witch. Witch. Okay. Number six for adults, vampire. That's cool. Number six for pets, Batman character. And I think this is that one dog that was wearing that Batman mask a long time ago. I don't know. Number seven for children, pirate slash Marvel superhero. And this says excluding Spider-Man. Wait a minute. Come on. Everybody knows that Spider-Man is a Marvel superhero. Anyway, adults, number seven is zombie. Number seven for pets, ghost. What? Okay, I'm confused. Number eight for children, Disney princess. But they already had princess, so I don't understand that one. So I guess it's specifically Disney. Number eight for adults, DC superhero. So it says Batman, Wonder Woman, Star Wars character. Whoops, I think they got that wrong. Anyway, number eight for pets. This one is really confusing. Cat. Dress your cat up as a cat, I guess. Number nine for children, ghost. I don't think kids dress up as ghosts anymore. Number nine for adults, slasher movie villain. So Jason, the William Shatner Scream mask, etc. Pets, number nine is a witch. And number 10 for children is Wonder Woman. I don't think I could squeeze into that. Number 10 for adults is also Wonder Woman. And in case you're thinking that pets number 10 is also Wonder Woman, it's not. It's Star Wars character. Because they can all hold a lightsaber, right? And again, this is all from the NRF, National Retail Federation website, stats and statistics. Their annual spending survey conducted by Prosper Insights and Analytics. So there's another website real quick that had 100 Halloween fun facts, and it was brought to you by Dark Shadow Ghost Tours. Now, there's no way I'm doing all 100, but there's a few here that I wanted to mention real quick, because I think these are pretty cool stuff. Trick-or-treating, and I know I told you I wasn't going to do the history stuff because it's boring, but trick-or-treating, yes, it did evolve from the ancient Celtic tradition of putting out treats and food to placate spirits who roamed the streets at Samhain, a sacred festival that marked the end of the Celtic calendar year. Number two here, during the pre-Halloween celebration of Samhain, Bonfires were lit to ensure the sun would return after the long, hard winter. Often, druid priests would throw the bones of cattle into the flames, and hence, bonfire, which eventually became bonfire. Bonfires are a big thing out here in Northeast Ohio this time of the year. It's what people do. They burn stuff because it's good. It's fun to burn things. Well, I can't get in trouble with the FCC for saying that. But anyway, bonfire became bonfire. Number three, the FDA's 2009 Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act was misinterpreted by many media outlets who erroneously reported that the act included a ban on candy cigarettes. In fact, the ban really just affected tobacco cigarettes that had candy or fruit flavorings. I know I was always thought that too. All the kids were like, oh my gosh, you can't get candy cigarettes anymore. Oh heck no. I have an addiction to candy cigarettes. I can tell you, you can still get them if you know where to look. Number four here, Brock's. If Brock's laid out the candy corn kernels it sells each year end to end, it would wrap around the earth 4.25 times. Again, another one of my favorites, the candy corn. Number five, the per-person consumption of candy by Americans in 2010 was an astounding 24.7 pounds, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. I could tell you that's wrong. Because I eat like a 3-pound bag of gummy bears probably twice a week. Probably should have said that live on the air. Yeah, I'll probably be dead next year. Number six, in 2010, Belleville, Illinois became the latest city to ban trick-or-treating for kids over 12. Teens can face fines from $100 to $1,000 for going door-to-door. Although, according to officials, more often than not, overage Halloween goers are just given a warning. And a stomachache. Well, I added that last part in. Number seven, the pumpkin originated in Mexico about 9,000 years ago. It is one of the America's oldest known vegetables. Pumpkins generally weigh from 15. You know, I paused because I was thinking I was going to say something smart, but I couldn't think of anything quick enough. Pumpkins generally weigh 15 to 30 pounds, although some weigh as much as 200 pounds. A lot of carving. The majority of pumpkins are orange, but they can also be white, yellow, or striped. Pumpkins are rich in vitamin A, beta carotene, and potassium, and their seeds provide protein and iron. So they're good for you. Just don't eat too many of them, because they'll give you arrhythmia. The biggest pumpkin pie on record was 20 feet in diameter and weighed 3,699 pounds. It was baked by the New Bremen Giant Pumpkin Growers in Ohio in 2010, breaking their own previous record, world record, of 2,020 pounds. The ginormous orange pie contained 1,212 pounds of pumpkin, 233 dozen eggs, 109 gallons of evaporated milk, 525 pounds of sugar, oh my gosh, and 7 pounds of salt. And 14.5 pounds of cinnamon for flavoring. This is a fun one. 1964, Helen File of Green Lawn, New York, was arrested for handing out arsenic-laced treats as a prank on teens she deemed too old for trick-or-treating. That'll show them. That'll show them. And number 10, Halloween is the third biggest party day of the year behind New Year's Eve and Super Bowl Sunday. And I can tell you from my experience, this is one little factoid I might not have ever spilled the beans on here live on the show, but I used to work in a bakery, and I can tell you that Halloween is the number one cupcake holiday of the year, believe it or not. Wait, am I allowed to say that? It's too late. I already did. Halloween is always a fun, festive time, but you know what? Some bad things also happen. And let me throw that link in the chat room. You guys want to read the rest of the 100? Go for it. Here's the link to that story. Squash. It is squash. So, 9 bad things that happened on Halloween throughout history. I normally don't like to do the today in history thing. Dave Considine, who's a religious demonologist, he used to do that. It was his thing. I did the Paranormal News Insider on the Grand Dark Conspiracy. Dave Considine did This Day in History. He did a wonderful job at it. That's why I kind of don't do that, but in his honor. But here is 9 bad things that happened on Halloween throughout history. And just think about this. Halloween is the scariest day of the year, especially if it's on Friday the 13th. Did you get it? No, nobody got that. The rise of fascism. On October 31st, 1922, the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini was elected to power. Scary stuff. On October 31st, 1990, William Anthony Odom was 15 years old when he accidentally hung himself when staging a gallows scene in the basement of his haunted house. Should have done it a couple days earlier, probably. On October 31st, 1981, a couple was murdered in their home in Manhattan. They were severely beaten and then shot in the head execution style, and their house was ransacked. The murder was thought to be related to drugs. However, word from a prison informant turned the case on its head as inmate David Berkowitz, the notorious Son of Sam killer, predicted the murder weeks before it happened. He gave an eerily accurate account of what was done to the slain couple's apartment, but could not have perpetrated the murders. So this case remains unsolved. Uh-oh. On October 31st, 1977, 1-year-old Nima Louise Carter went missing from her cradle. Since all the windows and doors in her room were locked shut, it is believed her abductor was hiding out in the closet. The child was found a month later, dead in the refrigerator in an abandoned house nearby. What makes this case even freakier is that the previous year, 3-year-old twin girls went missing in the same town. They were lured out of their house and then trapped in a fridge. They were found 2 days later, but only one survived. The surviving child, Tina Carpitcher, identified their babysitter as the kidnapper, but the accusation never led to a conviction. A year later, the same babysitter was Nima Louise Carter's babysitter. She was a suspect again, but there was no evidence to convict her. Years later, she was charged with the Carpitcher's child's murder and served a life sentence, but never admitted to the murder of Nima Louise Carter. October 31st, 2005, officials in Frederica, Delaware, thought that their neighbor had reached new heights with her Halloween decorations. I remember the story. I actually did this story on the Paranormal News Insider. A body hanging from a tree in the garden was thought to be a decoration for 3 hours before people realized it was an actual person. Ooh. In the run-up to Halloween in 2012, a 9-year-old girl was shot outside of her home during a Halloween party by a relative who thought she was a skunk. She was dressed up in a black dress and black and white hat with a tassel on top, which misled her killer. The child was shot in the shoulder, arm, and back, as well as her neck, by her cousin and was rushed to the hospital to be treated. She lived but sustained serious damage to her internal organs and spine and still has to undergo tests for lead poisoning. Halloween 1974, Timothy O'Brien was 8 years old when he ate some Halloween candy that was spiked with cyanide. Now, his father was the one who spiked the candy, motivated by the huge life insurance policy on his son. Now, this is one twisted story, and I'll provide a little bit more information here. Ronald Clark O'Brien, who died March 31st, 1984, formerly of Deer Park, Texas, nicknamed the Candyman, or the man who killed Halloween, was convicted of killing his 8-year-old son, Timothy, on Halloween of 1974 with potassium cyanide lace pixie sticks, so I don't eat those things, in order to claim a life insurance money to ease his own financial troubles, being over $100,000 in debt at the time. He also distributed poison candy to his daughter and 3 other children in an attempt to cover up his crime. However, neither his daughter nor the other children ate the poison candy. Why? because it's pixie sticks. A postman arrived at a porch to deliver his usual morning mail on the route on November 1st when he saw one of his stops had a rather convincing Halloween decoration on the doorstep. Well, the postman sidestepped the convincing-looking dead body and delivered the mail. But it would never be received as the man had collapsed and died on his doorstep the night before. Yeah, snow, rain, sleet, hail, or dead bodies, we always deliver the mail. 2014, another bad year for convincing Halloween decorations as a man dragged a headless body out of his apartment and then kicked the head to the other side of the street. And, you know, people just thought, that's Halloween. That's just some kind of prank. Well, the truth only came to light a little later when the person tried to move the dead body out from the middle of the street and realized it was a real person. The body was that of Patricia Ward, whose son had a history of mental illness and one night just decided to decapitate his mother after he left the body in the street. He left in front of a moving train. So, no conviction. No conviction for him. Heads will roll. Yikes. And so I want to talk a little bit about ghost stories. And it's interesting. We see all these ghost stories all over the internet. And we know, you know, these are told by people. It could be secondhand accounts, third-hand accounts. We don't really know where these stories come from or what, you know, they're usually kind of a way to talk about history or kind of folklore, local folklore. There's usually a lesson involved with this, like don't leave your windows unlocked at night or something silly. Kind of like the way the crybaby bridges, a lot of those stories actually come from, and this is argumentative, people can claim I'm wrong, but a lot of crybaby bridges stories that have come from the United Kingdom come from the days of highwaymen. And this is a way to keep children from going near bridges so they weren't kidnapped for ransom. But anyway, a lot of these stories are passed down. But some of these stories have actually influenced the way we see ghosts. Not see ghosts, but see how we see ghosts in folklore. And I really want to touch, if I can just do one story, it's this one. One of the earliest, what you could call it, true ghost stories. That really kind of, once I kind of discuss this, you'll understand why it's so important and how it's shaped how we see ghosts to this day. It actually was written nearly 2,000 years ago by a man named Pliny the Younger. And, I mean, this is part of the Halloween history stuff you might have heard about Pliny the Younger. It's the oldest ghost story ever told, pretty much. Well, Pliny the Younger, he was a smart guy, lived in Rome back in that time period. The Romans, man, let me tell you, Romans were very terrified of ghosts. They made sure that they buried people correctly, and they had all kinds of superstitions about ghosts and ghosts coming back. But Pliny the Younger told the story, and it goes like this. There was formerly at Athens a large and handsome house, which nonetheless had been acquired, the reputation of being badly haunted. The folk told how at the dead of night, horrid noises were heard, the clanking of chains which grew louder and louder until there suddenly appeared the hideous phantom of an old man who seemed the very picture of abject filth and misery. His beard was long and matted, his white hair disheveled and unkempt, his thin legs were loaded with a weight of galling fetters, and he dragged wearily along with a painful moaning. His wrists were shackled by long, cruel links, whilst ever and anon he raised his arms and shook his shackles in a kind of impotent fury. Some few mocking skeptics who were once bold enough to watch all night in the house had been well nigh scarred from their senses at the sight of the apparition. And, what was worse, disease and even death itself proved the fate of those who, after dusk, had ventured within these accursed walls. The place was shunned. A placard "To Let" was posted, but year succeeded year, and the house fell almost to ruin and decay. Well, then, according to Pliny the philosopher, Athenodorus visited the city looking for a house to rent. Well, Athenodorus was a philosopher, and like most philosophers, they were kind of like the ghost hunters of their time. They didn't really have a lot of money. They just kind of, you know, I don't know, people just threw money at him, a little hat in the street. So Athenodorus found this house and, not having a whole lot of money, decided to, buy this cheap house, even though he knew the whole story. He decided to rent it anyway. It was Athenodorus's habit to write and study at night. And on his first night in the haunted house, he refused to change his routine. In fact, he decided to work on some particularly difficult problems. I guess that's kind of hard being a philosopher. You got to think. So his mind would be fully absorbed and would not play tricks on him. And he made him make him see things that were not there. And Pliny says, quote, he was soon absorbed in philosophical calculations, but presently the noise of rattling chain, at first distant and then growing nearer, broke on his ear. However, Athenodorus, being particularly occupied with his notes, was too intent to interrupt his writings until, as the clanking became more and more continuous, he looked up, and there before him stood the phantom, exactly as had been described. The ghastly figure seemed to beckon with his finger, but the philosopher signed him with his hand that he was busy, and again bent to his writing. The chains were shaken angrily, and with persistence, upon which Athenodorus quietly arose from his seat, and taking the lamp, motioned the specter to lead before. The ghost led the philosopher through the house and into a garden. At a spot in the garden shrubbery, the ghost signed and then disappeared. Athenodorus marked the spot and then went back into the house and retired for the night. He slept soundly. The next morning, he went to the local magistrates, told them what he had seen, and suggested that the spot at which the ghost had disappeared should be investigated. This was done, and when investigators started digging, they unearthed a human skeleton just a few feet below the surface. Ancient and rusted chains still clung to the bones. The remains were carefully collected and properly buried. The house was then cleansed by various rituals, and it was never again troubled by ghosts or bad luck. Now, you hear that story, and if I wouldn't have told you it was 2,000 years ago, I could have told you that was last week. Sounds very similar. People seeing ghosts, and then they find the bones. You cleanse the house, and nothing happens. Was it the cleansing of the house, or was it the burying of the bones that ended this story? But again, taking some bits of folklore, you might have always wondered where chains rattling in the attic, you see ghosts with chains and all that stuff. You might have wondered where that came. Well, that came from this story. Also influenced the Charles Dickens story, A Christmas Carol. Marley's ghost with the chains. And one thing I teach too is, I'm not really going to take the time to read this next story in whole, but you wonder why ghosts appear in white sheets. Well, a lot of these stories of ghosts come from a time when people were buried in cloth, in white cloth. And this is why, during those times, the ghost stories came about. Ghosts appeared wearing white clothing or white sheets, not like you see with the little holes cut out. Kind of, sort of, but not exactly. But with shrouds, winding sheets, winding cloths, there's different words for these. And you don't have to go too far to remember the Shroud of Turin, right? Shroud of Turin was a white sheet. Ah, see, it's all coming to you now. And in 1666, not making it up, 1666... the burial in woolen acts was enacted in England. The acts of the Parliament of England, which required the dead, except for plague victims and the destitute, to be buried in pure English woolen shrouds. And meant to... So they were buried in white shrouds. white woolen shrouds. So this is how people were buried. And again, people throughout history have always feared the dead coming back. We don't know, obviously, how our ancestors, Neanderthal and pre, you know, Homo habilis and all these other pre-Homo sapiens. We don't know how they thought about this stuff. We don't know what they did. But we do know that burial did start about 130,000 years ago. And obviously, probably more than likely, notice how I kind of distanced myself with that. More than likely, this was to dispel potential scavengers. So the rest of the family wouldn't get eaten. You know, you don't want Uncle Bill with his little leg that doesn't really work as well as it used to. You don't want him getting caught by a saber-toothed tiger. So if you bury Uncle Willie, you might be able to save him from the scavengers coming around. And probably also to avoid the decomposition smell. You know, dead bodies don't really smell all that good. If you've ever smelled a dead body, you probably can never shake that smell the rest of your life. Yeah. Who knows? It could have also been for the care of family members, which provides closure. That's one of the reasons why we have these whole things of the burial process and the funeral and all these. It's really for the care for the family members more than it is the body. But it's a carryover from the time when people were fearful that if we don't take care of this process correctly, somebody might come back and haunt us. And I don't think we have that fear as much anymore. But it's interesting, the funeral is pretty much the same way it's been done for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Even going back to the ancient Egyptians, they had funerals pretty much the same way we do, except they used to obviously build these monoliths and things. And we don't do stuff like the Greek used to do. Ancient Greeks used to shove a coin in the mouth of the dead, and that was for Chiron the ferryman, so you can get across the river Styx. Not just a band, it's also a river. So there's a little history there for you. Interesting history about ghosts. Now, I didn't get into all the ghost stories, but you know, there's so many stories out there. And you can believe them if you want. You can doubt them if you'd like. But there's always an ounce of truth to everything that you read about ghosts, because they're all born out of some of the folklore that's been handed down for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, from stories of people sitting around fires talking about these scary events based on fear, based on first-hand accounts, based on second-hand accounts. It doesn't matter, because there is truth to these stories. People have been seeing other people coming back from the dead for a long time. And tonight, be careful. Be wary. Keep an eye out, because tonight is the night when that veil is at its thinnest. So if you see something moving out of the corner of your eye, you might not want to look. Don't tempt it. Slowly close your eyes and open them slowly. Don't look in the direction. And if you still see that movement, you've got your answer. There's more than likely a ghost peeking at you right now. Or it could just be a sty. I don't know. You might have something in your eye. Might want to just wipe it out. Could be sleep, for all I know. Hopefully I didn't put you to sleep tonight. It's fun to kind of derail the show and just talk about different things. And yes, chains. You don't really hear too much about that anymore. I know when I was a kid, kids would dress up as ghosts and they had chains, but you don't see that too much anymore. But you still do see the white sheets, which is kind of freaky, because there are still to this day certain groups out there that still follow this as a tradition. I know it's a Jewish tradition to use burial cloth, white burial cloth typically, to bury their dead. And now it's becoming in fashion again for people that want to not harm the environment. They use biodegradable cloth and wrap the body and bury them, which is kind of weird, because it's almost coming full circle. You know, we use these big these big caskets and all this heavy stuff, and now we're going back to just burying people in shrouds, and they're claiming, oh, this is good for the environment. Yeah, well, we used to do that all the time. So that's the way it was and the way it is. Probably the way it always will be. And it's sad, it's depressing, I know, to talk about funerals and things like that. But unfortunately, it is tied to ghosts, death, dying, and the returned. It's all connected. It's all the thing here. So it all comes around. And yes, unfortunately, we all will have our day too. But hopefully you can enjoy life before that happens. Just don't get down on yourself. Just get out there and have fun. Enjoy yourself. Take chances. Go on vacations. Blow through all your money. Don't worry about retirement. Wait, that's probably not good advice. Yeah. But who wants to live forever, as Queen once said? Is that a famous quote? I don't think so. Anyway, I guess it's time to say goodnight and enjoy the rest of your Halloween. And next week, we will be back, same time, same station, same sandbox, for a new Paranormal News Insider. We'll have some news for you, and we'll get back to the grind, and then we'll get closer. The end of November. Wow, it's already the beginning of November. I better start thinking about this top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017, because it's coming up quick. It is coming up quick. Anyway, thanks to everybody for sticking around tonight and listening to the show. Hopefully it provided you some entertainment, some education, some knowledge. And hopefully I didn't scare you too much or put you to sleep. But this is a fun night, and this is a night where even a skeptic will definitely believe in the other side and what's going on out there, because it is very spooky. It's cold. It's rainy. There's crazy looking kids running around in witch costumes and dogs dressed up as pumpkins. It's scary times out there right now. So big thanks to everybody tuning into the chat room. Thank you, Dita, for that graphic. It's nice. Thank you, Jim Mallard, for showing up tonight, and everybody else in the chat room there. I don't know if anybody left. Audrey for showing. She was the first one here. She even beat Dita. Yep. Anyway, thank you for everybody listening to the show. Hopefully it was a nice little break, nice little entertainment here for Halloween night. And it was my pleasure to bring it to you as well. But again, I will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies or maybe in the corner of your room. Keep your ears in the woods, or maybe wondering what that is crawling under your bed tonight. And definitely keep the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar and your bedroom door ajar as well. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.